Hello and welcome to Best Practice. I'm Anne Arnold, bringing you the second of a two-part special called Mind Your Business, about the current business preoccupation with social impact. What's driving it? What are the benefits and limitations? And what does it look like? Let's head to this purpose conference, as in business with purpose, in a converted warehouse in inner city Sydney.
So in my phone here, which I'm ashamed to say probably has rare earth minerals in it, mined by little kids in Africa, many of whom have died since the mining of the minerals because they're expendable, but I've pulled it out of a suit that has been made ethically.
David Cook is the managing director and chairman of the Australian subsidiary of the global technology company Konica Minolta. They mostly supply scanners and printers to businesses.
But I'm also responsible for the Pacific Islands as well as Australia. And so when I was in Fiji, where this suit was made, I thought they were made in Melbourne, but when I Googled, oh, they're now made in Fiji, lower cost of labour and so on, I just rocked up at the factory. And it took about 30 minutes before they asked me if I'd leave, which was fair enough. I didn't have an appointment. I was just a random guy off the street. But in that 30 minutes, I had a really nice chat to a lot of different people and asked if I could use the bathroom down the back of the factory because I knew it was down the back, so I got to wander through and did enough due diligence that I'm going to keep buying this brand of suit.
David Cook knows he's talking to a converted audience. Mostly millennials, many of them work for not-for-profit organisations that seek to improve people's lives, or they're in social impact roles in the private sector. The millennial generation are known to be concerned about the ethics of their consumption and the ethics of their employers.
All I need to know whether I should buy something or not from a particular company is pull my phone out of my pocket, because on there I've got a couple of apps. I've got Good On You and I've got Shop Ethical, and there are others as well, and I think, you know, Oxfam have readily available information. And I think it's incumbent on all of us, as well as all companies in Australia, to do their due diligence and don't spend your money with bad companies. Spend your money with companies that have started on the journey of trying to do the right thing.
Businesses know they have to appeal to this all-powerful millennial generation. As consumers, they're more driven by peer-to-peer influence rather than advertising, and a sense that they can spark change. David Cook, as a business leader, is at the vanguard. When he was promoted from sales and marketing manager to head of Konica Minolta in Australia a few years ago, he says he made his social goal clear.
I stood up at a conference when it was announced that I'd be the managing director. So I literally walked up about five steps, turned around at a lectern to about 300 people. A second before I spoke, I had no idea what I was going to say. And what came out of my mouth was I said, I want us to all work together to build a company that really cares. Cares about the people who work here, cares about our clients and cares about our community.
Initially, that meant partnering with some not-for-profits to help them achieve their goals. The Smith Family, Landcare and the Breast Cancer Network of Australia. That's not so unusual. Plenty of companies do that these days. But this company also decided to put a spotlight on its own supply chain. Enter Laura McManus.
I guess 5 years ago, I was riding a bicycle and trampling around Nepal, working for a child's rights organisation over there. But no, never thought that would lead me to a Japanese technology company in Sydney.
With a master's degree in human rights, Laura is Konica Minolta's ethical sourcing lead. Her job is to monitor supply chains. But as part of a global company, that's not easy. Their printers and scanners are made in Asia by the Japanese parent company.
There's a lot of hotspots, particularly in the Asia-Pacific region for electronics manufacturing. So for us, we have our own facilities in Japan, Malaysia and China, as well as where we would have kind of second tier. So that's the suppliers that supply into our manufacturing facilities, also in those regions.
And what are you looking at there?
What are you hoping to be able to change or at least monitor?
So what you will find perhaps in a factory in Malaysia, in an electronics factory, there is some issues around a migrant workforce. So workers coming from other parts, so perhaps coming from Nepal, Bangladesh, Indonesia even, coming into factories to work. And so there you're looking at issues around debt bondage, which is the payment of a high recruitment fee, wherein the worker doesn't actually have a lot of take-home money because there's money being taken out to pay for the job itself.
And they have to pay that out before they can leave as well.
Exactly. And along with that, there has been historically issues around passport retention. So workers keeping passports, which then restricts freedom of movement, which would be one of the indicators that would be a forced labour indicator.
So to what extent can you here in Sydney determine if any of that is going on at any part of your supply chain in Malaysia?
As a subsidiary of our parent company, we certainly have a lot of conversations with our team in Tokyo that kind of drive this process for our product.
Konica Minolta is involved in some industry self-regulation, including an alliance for mostly the electronics sector. Is it the case, David, that to an extent, because you're part of a multinational, you're subject to whatever their rules and frameworks are? There's only a certain amount you can control from Australia.
Yes, but there's a great deal we can control. So we can't control the manufacturing process itself for the products we sell, but we can control every single thing that we buy here in Australia to make our business turn over. So office furniture, logistics and warehousing, commercial cleaning contracts, uniforms, all of those things, we can go and have discussions with those suppliers and drive them to investigate their supply chains. And I've made the statement to a lot of our suppliers that Laura has convened in workshops and meetings that we want to work with you. We're not going to bash anybody up and we're only novices at this ourselves. But at the same time, at the end of the day, after a reasonable period of time of working together, those that can't guarantee us that their supply chains are free of slavery will move our business elsewhere.
And remember that point David Cook made at the Purpose Conference about his phone? About people, children, possibly suffering in its creation. Well, those same raw minerals that go into phones also go into Konica Minolta's printers, which doesn't sit well with David or his supply chain lead, Laura McManus.
So there's certainly environmental risk around the mining component of it. But if you look geographically where in the world these are coming from, there's hotspots around the Democratic Republic of Congo. I mean, Africa, where I think around 80 to 86% of these materials come from that go into electronic products. And that certainly there's risks around child labour, forced labour, and what's known as conflict minerals. The profits from the mining are in fact used to support armed groups in those areas. So there's an element of risk around that. And there's certainly programs that we're a part of through our head office where they look after this. So we're part of different groups that are looking at conflict minerals in the supply chain.
There would be a critique, though, that that's perhaps an attempt at whitewashing. Mm. It's an easy distraction to say, oh, look, we're doing this, but meanwhile, we'll keep using these extracted minerals with all their associated problems.
There's certainly a lot of conversation around people are even now calling out this idea of rights washing. I think we need to be pragmatic in how we approach it. And if every electronic company in the world stopped using conflict minerals, as it were, or kind of minerals from a higher risk environment, we would have none of the products we have today. And so if we think practically, that's unlikely to happen, not only from the business perspective, but also from the consumer demand for new products and innovative products. So what companies are well positioned to do is to use their influence in that transaction to actually make change on the ground where it occurs.
This year, the Australian government plans to introduce a Modern Slavery Act, and Konica Minolta has championed that move. David Cook.
We absolutely believe on two levels, one, a moral and ethical level, that we have to play our role in eliminating slavery in our time, and on a pure commercial level of risk mitigation. Businesses don't know a lot about this thing called modern slavery at the moment. They've heard the term, but they don't know a lot about it. They don't know how big the risk is. They don't know how to get rid of it. And if there's a Modern Slavery Act, particularly if there's an independent commissioner appointed to work with business and help business, well, then it's just going to be good for everybody.
Business has a lot at stake. This is Associate Professor Bronwyn Dalton from the UTS Business School.
People are disaffected with big business. They're experiencing increased numbers of popular protests, consumer boycotts, legal suits, various public shaming campaigns, all trying to highlight businesses as a source of doing social wrong.
And reputational damage is very expensive damage.
This level of distrust is very bad for business, hence the new emphasis on shared value and corporate social responsibility.
There's been a surge in corporate interest in human rights and supply chains, says Konica Minolta's Laura McManus. She previously worked with Andrew Twiggy Forrest's Walk Free Foundation in Perth, which campaigns against modern slavery.
There's a really, really exciting shift happening, starting, I guess, 4 years ago working over at Walk Free, working on the business team, I guess, struggling to even want CEOs to come and talk to you about this, to now being actively approached, you know, near on a weekly basis by someone in another company coming to us to talk about not only what we're doing, but what we're doing in the policy and advocacy space as well.
Companies like Konica, they are really getting much more sophisticated about how to actually achieve social outcomes, in particular focusing on the highly complex and challenging issue of creating an ethical supply chain.
And there's a lot more community awareness now too, isn't there? It's less likely that the broader community will turn a blind eye.
Unethical supply chains are a massive business risk. If people find out that their kids' sneakers were made by an 8-year-old, that does not sit well with that corporate brand. So it's as much a protection of the brand as motivated by altruistic principles.
And guess what? It's good for business.
I think it's indisputable now that we've been able to achieve good for others in the work that we've done and also benefited ourselves as an organisation in an industry that is going through a very, very tough time, because we're still about 90% of our business is hard copy print, about 10% is software. And as you probably know, people print less these days. Everything's digital.
But Konica Minolta in Australia has been achieving year-on-year growth in revenue. David Cook attributes it to the signing up of some significant new clients, who he says anecdotally report that they chose his firm because they liked its values.
Yeah, so it's not necessarily why we focus on doing some community good, but it has produced those benefits as a consequence, I think.
And within the Konica Minolta company itself, he says the new social emphasis is resonating with the workforce. At the Purpose Conference in February, David Cook told how, as a newly installed boss, he set about finding out what staff needed. Firstly, they wanted to be kept in the loop.
So communication was number one, and number two was purpose. Give us more purpose when we walk through the front door every morning. And it's interesting that I was looking at some research recently, into what motivates people in new economy companies. And number one was purpose. Number two was autonomy, and number three was mastery. So this theme of purpose keeps coming up time and time again. And it's a basic innate human need, I think, and companies need to fulfil and nurture that need if they're going to be healthy workplaces.
And alongside purpose, there's engagement.
Every CEO lies awake at night trying to work out, how do you get everybody to be more engaged? You know, how do you get people to come in with some juice in the morning and still leave with some juice in the evening for their families and their other activities? And it's not that easy to build that engagement when you're just selling tech like we do, you know?
The solution is to offer social purpose. For Konica Minolta, that also includes supporting a Cambodian charity that rescues women and children from sexual slavery in brothels and helps them build new livelihoods. David Cook has a favourite story about this.
I took everybody who'd been in the company for 25 years or more out to dinner to say thank you for being here for 25 years. And there are about a dozen people, and they're all the field service engineers that go into offices and they fix our network printing and scanning devices. They're the kind of stayers. And at the end of the meal, one man who hadn't spoken all evening said, could I please say something? And he stood up in the middle of this public restaurant. There were about 12 of us, but there were other people dining. And I reckon this was the first public speech he'd ever made in his life. And he said, for 25 years I've worked here and I never told anybody where I worked for 25 years. I just didn't see the relevance of that. Now I tell every single person I meet that I work for Konica Minolta. And the reason I do is that I feel so proud to work for an organisation that would care about young women that have been trafficked into a life of sexual slavery.
On RN, this is Mind Your Business, a best practice special. I'm Anne Arnold. In Cairns, in the far north, employees at the Myhaven Construction and Property Development Company, featured in episode one of this series, also get a whole other level of reward from the company's focus on training and finding jobs for disadvantaged people.
So my name's John Stabile, Construction Project Manager at Myhaven. I've been working here for 5 months now. I've spent 25 years essentially on the tools.
What's it like working for a company that has this social agenda?
Look, it's, you know, I'm old enough now to realise that sometimes a job can be just a job, yeah, and a lot of people just do it because it pays bills and it keeps the wheels greased. I think sometimes you get to a stage in life where you need a little bit more than that, and when you think and when you feel you're making even the smallest of difference, it's a pretty good feeling. You know, you're not just talking about what went wrong on site today or the why that cost blowout or whatever the usual problems are. Sometimes you can talk about this is the difference I made or this is the difference Myhaven made or it's just it's a nice feeling knowing that you've at least tried to make a difference.
And the sales and marketing person, Elaine Deans, agrees.
It feels good. I mean, it's a pretty amazing feeling saying, you know, we're a social impact company, or what does that mean? And then when you tell people, they're just amazed. And it's like, well, it's not that much of a stretch to go that little bit further, you know? It's just not that much of a commitment. And it's profit for purpose. We're still a profitable company.
If you want to tackle a social problem, then you better have a sustainable business and the business needs to scale and grow if you're going to have any impact on the social problem.
Myhaven has a key backer. Roger Allen is based in an office in a laneway near Sydney's Circular Quay. He's sometimes referred to as a billionaire investor.
Well, I'm an investor. But I really, you know, I've done very well out of, you know, starting up my own business in technology, and I've always been focused on how technology could help tackle social problems. So I've been working a lot in the Indigenous communities and looking at, you know, how we get people off welfare and, you know, trained up and get into sustainable jobs.
Roger Allen founded the Computer Power Group, which became a global billion-dollar IT business. These days, he's a venture capitalist and social impact investor. The Myhaven company is one of his main interests. He's an equal shareholder with Sarah and James Mort, who are on the ground in Cairns.
But I am actively involved. I'm not a passive shareholder, and I've been the major funder of the business.
And when you say you're the major funder, you mean above and beyond your shareholding?
Yeah, well, I put equity money into the business, but then I also help fund on a project basis as well.
One of those Myhaven projects has been working with remote Aboriginal communities to train locals to build their own housing. It's an alternative to pre-built housing being delivered in kit form with no involvement from the community and no jobs.
But we only do it in communities, you know, where they want to do it, you know. One of the real problems in Indigenous communities is there's so much top-down. The government tells you this, you want a benefit, you've got to work for the dollar, you've got to do this, you've got to do that. You will get this house, you won't, all those things. And the only way forward is for communities to themselves really want to do something, be passionate, and then we can support and help them.
The boys have really completed 19 houses to date, and they've done their work in steel frame, timber and block, and they've got another 10 to build this financial year, so that takes the total for these young locals up to 29. So, you know, I think that's a really great achievement that they can build 29 houses for the community, and it's proven to be really successful.
Ross Andrews is mayor of the Yarrabah Aboriginal Shire Council. Yarrabah's just down the coast from Cairns, but in many ways functions like a remote community. There's 45% unemployment, and access can be cut off by floods and rain. But at the moment, there's a lot of pride, both in the community and at Myhaven, that five men are nearing the end of carpentry apprenticeships. Charles Merger is one of them. He's 36 and he's never had a job before.
How does it make you feel that you're building houses there for your community?
Proud of it, and the community are proud that we're building more houses. Even younger boys finish school. They asking if I could talk to the boss to if they can have a go.
So it's kind of it's a role modelling thing.
Yep.
That must make you feel proud.
Yeah, it does. Give me goosebumps.
Gives you goosebumps.
Myhaven worked with the Yarrabah Council to get training underway, doing on-the-job training with maintenance and repairs and building new houses. But the council now runs the building program itself. The council's executive manager of works and infrastructure is Dawn Lake. She's a Torres Strait Islander who grew up in far north Queensland.
And so local people were getting very few opportunities. And then by doing this and trying to retain as much as possible within the community, there has been a lot of spin-offs from it. So from, you know, just from doing this, we've assisted another business to actually start. There's a young man who started his own company in doing all of the roofing, doing roof sheeting. So he does all of the roofs on our new construction and upgrade houses. We've supported two other local companies in plumbing and painting.
The ripple effect is extremely important. What it's doing is building a sense of community, and it's measurable. We can measure, for example, the increase in social capital.
Bronwyn Dalton is the director of UTS's not-for-profit and social enterprise program.
It's about measuring what really matters, not the widgets, not how many programs. It's how we've changed lives. And without resources, it's quite hard for these organisations to properly measure their social impact.
And because it's also, it's innovation socially and business-wise, so they're kind of working it out as they go along. They've barely got time to stop and document.
The only way innovation can benefit society is if we codify it, if we capture it and bottle it and teach it to somebody else. So that's where the university comes in. That's where we want to help organisations.
Last year, Myhaven went through a fairly exhaustive box-ticking exercise to become accredited as a B or benefit corporation, the only construction company in Australia to have it. B Corp is a movement that began in the US to set standards for companies to prove that they're making a positive difference, both internally with staff and suppliers and externally with society at large. And Myhaven director Sarah Mort says they scored well on most of their operations.
So we excelled on the diversity of our workforce, with 25% being Indigenous, but we also have other younger people from all walks of life of other countries that we have supported and employed.
Myhaven was also credited for its relationships in the broader community.
How we influence other businesses to have that social buy-in. I think that's another B Corp thing. They want to see how much you can influence down the food chain to make other people aware about how they could be part of a, you know, the B Corp world.
And so the tentacles of ethical business grow and spread. Meanwhile, in Cairns, there's a building boom. New hotels are being built, the place is buzzing. As property developers and builders, Sarah and James Mort could throw in their social impact focus and make a mozza. But they say that's not going to happen.
The passion that we instill in the people around us and the passion that Sarah and I have for what we do is inbuilt. You can't shake it out of us. Lots of people said, you're mad, why don't you just, you know, go back to developing. Kansas boom, starting to boom. So why don't you just do developing and take it easy and play golf on Fridays and do all that sort of stuff. But it's not in us, I'm afraid. It's not in us. You know, if we can change one person, we've achieved something. So
more than you'd achieve in a game of golf.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That was the final part of this little series called Mind Your Business. I'm Anne Arnold. Thanks for joining me. If you've got a story about a business doing interesting things along these lines, we'd love to hear about it. Send me an email. Contact details are on the Best Practice homepage. Thanks to Ian Coombe and Julie Browning and to sound engineer Martin Peralta. Next week on Best Practice, regular host Richard Adie's back. Bye-bye.